Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Attention class, attention, your regular teacher is away, so please help me in welcoming your substitute, Mr. Gord Stellick. This is the Jeff Blair Show with guest host Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I didn't quite pull it off in the end, but, you know, I still gave myself a chance with three, 4 holes to go, and that's what we play golf tournaments for. So, you know, I'm real proud of the way I played, and, you know, I think I'm going to be better for it the next time I'm back.
Well, David Hearn talking about close but no cigar as far as being a Canadian winning the RBC Canadian Open. And we're going to talk a little golf, a little baseball this hour. Just, I like being the substitute host better than the substitute teacher. They didn't do well. Boy, oh, boy. That was always tough when you had a substitute teacher and they all hell bent for leather. We're going to try to keep order and decorum here for the next 2 hours and throughout the week as Gord Stellick in for Jeff Blair on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Ian Hutchison, founder, editor of GoGolfNews.ca, joining us to talk about the RBC Canadian Open. How you doing, Hutch?
Good, Gordy, good morning, and as they were saying at Glen Abbey yesterday, good day, eh?
Well, good day, eh? Yeah, they were. You know what I really enjoyed listening to all the guys talk? So there was a Canadian story, then Bubba Watson said, well, wait a sec, my wife's from Canada, so I'm hoping they cheer for me a little bit. And then, you know, with Jason Day and a few of the others, they're saying the Canadian fans are pro-Canadian, but they're pro-good golf. They seem to just enjoy playing good golf.
Well, Gordy, considering your history with the Toronto Maple Leafs, for years you'd have the players coming in from other teams saying that Toronto fans are so knowledgeable about hockey and they just appreciate good hockey as much as there are partisan Toronto Maple Leaf fans. I think it's the same in golf. You know, I mean, we're regarded as one of the leading golfing nations as far as participation goes, and I think we really do appreciate, you know, a great shot, as Jason Day said. You understand a great shot. You understand a bad shot as well. And I think that's really what he's referring to, is just the way that, you know, the Canadian fans can warm to anyone who's having a great tournament.
And Ian, the other Ian Leggett, talking earlier about just that quote about, for David Hearn and a lot of people, you've got to learn to win day four. It's like tennis, to get that final game and win that final set. That's a bit of a hurdle in itself, and that's probably a positive experience for him yesterday because it's difficult.
Well, I think as well, you know, this is his second positive experience for David Hearn in the last 3 weeks. That indicates to me that David Hearn is on the verge of doing something. You know, he's still searching for that first PGA Tour win, and I think he's on the verge of it. I mean, obviously he was in the playoff a couple of weeks ago at the Greenbrier. You know, just was one putt short on that one. And then coming down, you mentioned, you know, finishing it off on day four. Actually, it came down to the final three holes, really, you know, with those two, you know, glaring par fives there that everyone wanted to take advantage of. And that's exactly what Jason Day and Bubba Watson did. And David Hearn just couldn't do it. You know, he didn't, you know, he played an even par round. Golf said that it had to be 3-4 under, and David Hearn just didn't get that done.
You know, looking at names like Jim Furyk, Stuart Sink finishing in the top five, and it seemed like when you add the other names we're chatting about, like Bubba Watson, that quite often it's the unknowns that are pretty well exclusively in the top five at the Canadian Open. And this time, although they didn't get the same profile, some of those big names came through at the end.
Yeah, and I think that's a positive for the Canadian Open, just because in the past few years, yeah, we have had kind of those, you know, lower profile names. You know, last year it was Tim Clark, and, you know, in previous years it was Nathan Green, for example, Taz Reavy. And, hey, you know, it's always great to see an underdog win, but by the same token, you still like to see those marquee guys come out and you know, take the championship, throw a lot of profile towards the Canadian Open. And I think this year, it was a very wildly entertaining tournament this year, you know, not only with the names, but also from a Canadian perspective. I mean, you know, obviously all the attention was on David Hearn. Let's not forget, too, that Adam Hannawood tied for seventh, so we had two Canadians in the top 10. And then you saw one of the developing guys, Adam Svensson, out of Surrey, BC, finished off nicely, you know, had a good tournament. So I think that kind of emphasizes the story of Canadian golf this year. We've got a lot of good developing guys, you know, playing down on PGA Tour Canada, you know, playing the mini tours like swingthought.com. Adam Svensson won three times on the Swing Thought Tour earlier this year, and he's just turned pro. You know, Alvin Choi out of Toronto, same deal. You know, he took a couple of mini tour wins earlier this year, and he also won the PGA Tour Canada qualifying school. So there's some real good stories going on in from a development point of view in Canadian golf.
Ian Hutchison, the founder, editor of golfnewsnow.ca, joining Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Looking back on it, it seems like this is a day of a lot of positive talk about certain events. And when the British Open went the extra day for, what, the first time since 1988, we're wondering about the effects it might have on the RBC Canadian Open. It sounds like not much. I mean, were there guys that pulled out?
No. That was the funny thing, was that basically the Canadian Open was untouched. I think partially what that has to do with is that a lot of them were Team RBC guys.
Yeah.
So they were, you know, they were obviously committed to playing the tournament. And, you know, but none of the other guys pulled out either. And I think, you know, probably one of the ways to look at it, too, is that the eventual champion, Jason Day, you know, he had a very disappointing finish at the Open Championship. You know, he just missed on a putt that would have put him into the playoff at the Open Championship. And the funny thing was, he came back and he had a very similar putt, actually, on the 72nd hole, which he sunk to win the thing. So, you know, there didn't seem to be any effect, actually, coming over, other than they were tired for a couple of days, but they seemed to respond quite well, and, you know, they came out of it with flying colors.
Yeah, it was funny. What was it, a couple of years ago when Ernie Els won, and then he goes, I'm going to blow off this thing in Canada. I have to go to. But to his credit, he was on that charter plane like the other guys were on Monday rather than Sunday, coming to the Canadian Open. So the future of Glen Abbey, I mean, it was there exclusively for so many years as far as it went. How did the course play this time compared to other times? And I guess in the future, they're not in the mix.
Well, it'll definitely be in the mix. Actually, I think you can expect to see the Open at Glen Abbey most times. You know, there's still talk, there's still that feeling that it should move around the country. And I agree with that. I mean, it definitely should be at Shaughnessy out of Vancouver, or Royal Montreal, or you know, there's the new Mickelson National out in Calgary. I think it should go out to those places. But I think on the most part, you're probably looking at Glen Abbey as the quasi-permanent home of the Canadian Open. So there's that. But, you know, really, the weather conditions were perfect this week, and that's really why David Hearn had to get those birdies that he needed. You know, he just didn't make enough birdies yesterday because the scoring conditions were just incredible, you know. And, you know, the only thing really that was defending Glen Abbey were the greens that got pretty fast and firm. But other than that, you know, there were prime scoring conditions. It became a very entertaining tournament.
Looking at the Canadian golf in general, and of course, Mike Weir now off for personal reasons for a while from the tour, but his golf game's been off for a number of years. And we've had different Canadian hopes come up, have maybe a bit, I wouldn't say meteoric, but just enjoy the limelight for a bit, and then not so much. So when you look at that about a David Hearn and the staying power, and what are going to be the keys for him to try to, say, emulate something comparable to what Mike Weir did in his prime?
Well, I think, you know, I look at David, you know, as I said earlier, he's looking for that first PGA Tour win. I think in a lot of ways you can kind of look at it from Jason Day's perspective, too, only on a different level. Jason Day right now, he's always hanging around in those major championships. You know, as we mentioned earlier at the Open Championship last week, he was a putt away from getting into the playoff. He's famous for getting into those top tens, you know, but not actually winning them. That's where David is as far as his getting his first PGA Tour win. They're both sitting there on that cusp, and, you know, they're just shy of getting there. And I think once David Hearn gets over that hump, and, you know, he was a couple of putts short this weekend, and once he gets over that, I think you're going to see him win 2-3 times, you know, right away, right off the bat, you know, within a couple of years. I think Graham DeLatte is there as well. You know, we had Nick Taylor win earlier this year. So I think there's a bunch of guys there, and I mentioned the developing guys who will be coming onto the PGA Tour in a couple of years. I think there's a bunch of them there that can probably break out in the next year. I think we're heading for a golden era as far as Canadians on the PGA Tour goes.
Well, sounds good about that. Ian Hutchison joining us from the founder editor of Golf News at golfnewsnow.ca. Gord Stellick with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. To go back to the guys coming over, and do you think that guys walk away or leave the tournament? Besides the obligation to RBC, which is a pretty strong pull, but help entice other guys, I want to say entice, but encourage other guys to make the trek, that you're seeing maybe a bit more of that about trying to get more established PGA players to stop in Canada after the British Open?
Well, in the next year, it's going to be very difficult. Next year, you've got the Canadian Open surrounded. You know, you've got the British Open the week before, as it always is. But because of the Olympics, right after the Canadian Open, you've got the PGA Championship coming up. So you got the Canadian Open sitting there as kind of the middle of a sandwich between two majors. So that's going to be a difficult one.
Okay, so take away that 1 year aberration, but just in general, do you feel a momentum or not?
Absolutely, I feel a certain amount of increased prestige to the Canadian Open. You know, it's going to be one of those ones that, you know, they're not going to flock to get into the field. But I see it being improved. I mean, I just look at this year, you know, the non-RBC guys who were here, and they did quite, you know, there were quite a few of them. So, and I can see that picking up because, you know, obviously they'll look at Jason Day, they'll look at what happened yesterday, and I think it's definitely going to increase as far as prestige goes. What you got to remember too, Gordy, is, and I don't think a lot of people really pay that much attention to this, as far as the American players go, you got to remember too is that they're going into a very busy time in the season. You know, obviously we got a World Golf Championship coming up. We got the FedEx Cup playoffs coming up. We got the PGA Championship coming up. The wild card in all that is that for a lot of these guys, their kids go back to school in August. And they all want to, you know, spend some time with their kids, spend some time with their family, as we all do. And I don't think that really gets brought into, you know, the reasons that they don't show up for the Canadian Open. But, yeah, I definitely do see, you know, an increased prestige level. You know, maybe not to the level that we'd like it, but I see it being better than what it has been in previous years.
One last question a bit out there, but going back to the British Open and just talking to golfers and other people last week, what's the sense about Tiger Woods, about what's happened with his game and the near future holding if he wants to get back on track?
I think Tiger Woods is just falling all over himself. I you know, he's got to get out of his own way. I definitely think, and a lot of people that I've talked to feel that he still has the physical capabilities of getting back to winning tournaments. I don't think we'll ever see the Tiger Woods that we got used to, but I think he still has the physical talents to, you know, win tournaments here or there, possibly even another major. But what he's got to do is give up this stuff about changing his swing and changing everything that, you know, that made him successful over the years. You know, he's gotten this thing into his head that he's got to keep working on things and working on things. And really, I think Tiger Woods got to go back and just have some fun with golf.
Yeah, it didn't look like too much fun last week or the week before for him. Looked like a lot of fun, though, in Glen Abbey the last few days. Hutch, always great catching up. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Anytime, Gordy. Always a pleasure.
Ian Hutchison joining us, the founder, editor of golfnewsnow.ca, joining Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, we are going to switch gears and talk some baseball in a few minutes' time. Meanwhile, on the hockey front, just the news you heard with the update at the top of the hour, New York Rangers have agreed on a six-year deal with Derek Stepan, a restricted free agent. The average salary, $6.5 million. Wow. So I got to stop saying wow to all those. That's what it is, right? 6 years, $39 million. So Derek Stepan, who wasn't going anywhere, but you're in a lot of ways, your RFAs are more complicated getting signed than your unrestricted free agents. And the New York Rangers deciding, obviously, a key part of their team. And I know on the Toronto Maple Leaf front, I've been on a number of shows or chatted certainly with Jeff Blair before, Dean Blundell as well. Good to see the Nazem Kadri contract put to bed a few weeks ago. 1 year and no distractions. Last year, training camp started, and it was still a distraction about what was going on with his contract in a season, a precursor to a season that just saw distractions all over the place. And, of course, Jonathan Bernier is one we await to hear as it's a team-elected salary arbitration to see how that will go. But for the New York Rangers, Derek Stepan agreeing to a 6-year contract, average yearly salary, $6.5 million. Jay Jaffe will be joining us in a minute or so to talk some Major League Baseball, talk trade deadline. Everyone loves trades. It seems baseball and hockey are the two that have the biggest excitement around the trade deadline. And actually, on the hockey front, it's been dwindling because more and more you've been getting what baseball gets, expired contracts that are traded of veteran players and some future prospects going the other way. And with Major League Baseball, Johnny Cueto getting traded from Cincinnati Reds to the Kansas City Royals, just in time for him to be scheduled to face the Toronto Blue Jays later this week. So as the Toronto Blue Jays try to get back in the wild card or wild card position, that's going to be a little bit more of a problem as the Kansas City Royals, fresh from a World Series appearance, decide that they used to be sellers, but now are buyers as they trade three prospects on that. And find out what other names we might see coming up over the next few days. Jay Jaffe, Major League Baseball writer for SI.com, joining us. How you doing, Jay?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Good. Handicap the trade, this particular trade.
The Cueto trade?
Yeah.
I think it's a fair exchange. I mean, the Royals have sent three left-handed pitching prospects of various pedigree, including their first-round draft pick from last year, a guy who some people feel may end up in the bullpen. That's Brandon Finnegan. A guy who was a former top prospect back in circa 2011, who had some arm trouble since then, but is looking like he's nearly ready for a rotation now in John Lamb, and then a guy who was a bit more of a flyer, big power arm down in Double A in Cody Reed, second round pick from a couple years ago. The Royals have been dealing and have been hoarding prospects for a while. This time they finally emptied out the farm system for an ace. This is a legitimate front of the rotation guy in Cueto for a rotation that really has been kind of the weak spot of the club. Nobody's been able to effectively replace the loss of James Shields. Yordano Ventura has struggled. Danny Duffy has had some arm problems and been pretty mediocre. And they lost Jason Vargas to surgery last week. So I think this is a good aggressive move for them to go for it.
Yeah, Jay, it's interesting. Just yesterday at Cooperstown, so a number of inductees, and you think about Randy Johnson, and being a Montreal Expo fan way back when, they went big for Mark Langston all those years ago and gave up three prospects, and one of them was Randy Johnson to the Seattle Mariners and that kind of trade. And then it seemed the last, I don't know, number of years that, I mean, the prospects weren't quite that. Well, Randy Johnson, that's a little bit out of the park that way. But am I getting the impression from what you're saying that now they have been upgraded more, that of late it's taken more higher valued prospects to land a guy like Johnny Cueto or others like that?
You know, I to be honest, I'm not sure how true that is. I haven't studied it systematically. I mean, certainly I think in Major League Baseball there's a tendency to overvalue prospects a bit lately. Now that analysts like myself study the matter more closely and try to put price tags on things, I think we have a better idea of the value of an individual prospect. But pitching prospects, I mean, that's such a fickle game. There's so many things that can happen with regards to injuries. And look, I mean, both Finnegan and Lamb have some dings there. Maybe one of them pans out, maybe two of them pan out. And if two of them pan out, it's a great deal for the Reds, who weren't going to be able to afford to keep Cueto. To some extent, you're just throwing darts and crossing your fingers when it comes to these deals. I mean, you make the best choices you can and hope that it pans out, but they don't always pan out.
You know, and I was talking on the hockey front. Baseball has kind of a similar front about trade deadline, and there's always the fans' hopes and expectations where really there's 24 other players that are key, but that 25th guy you can add trade deadline-wise, I don't mean 25th caliber player, but just somebody, mm-hmm. a new face coming in, making a difference, and then last year, the Oakland A's, who traditionally didn't go that way, did, and it didn't work out for them. And when you look at teams and you analyze baseball, is it important for every team that thinks they're going to contend to make some move at this point, or are there other teams you look at and say they'd be better to hold them?
Well, you know, it depends from deal to deal. I mean, you know, you in a vacuum, in a vacuum, I think obviously you can say yeah, every team should make an upgrade. But if the cost of it is your overall number one prospect, then the odds are pretty slim that it's actually going to pay off for what might be a one or at most two win upgrade over the course of the remainder of the season. Now, when you look at say for the Royals, if it's Jeremy Guthrie whom Cueto is replacing in the rotation, well, that's a guy whose ZRA is twice what Cueto's is now, roughly speaking. So that's a pretty significant upgrade over the remainder of the season. It's not going to affect their chances of winning the division so much as it is their chances of winning a playoff series. So, I think the calculus there becomes different. But I think there are teams that can tend to force it. I mean, obviously the Billy Beane move that traded Addison Russell for half a season of Justin Samardzija doesn't look so good in retrospect, particularly with the A's falling backwards this year and looking like they need prospects.
And Jay, as you say, you can't craft the deal because it always depends exactly who's coming back. But if you're Alex Anthopoulos and the Toronto Blue Jays, who in particular are you focusing on trying to get?
Well, given the situation in their bullpen, I mean, I think Aroldis Chapman's a guy who makes sense. He's arbitration eligible for one more season. It allows you to perhaps move Aaron Sanchez back to the rotation, which has really just been kind of a big weakness for the team after upgrading the offense over the winter. So, I think that's one area. I think you also need to get a starting pitcher. As well, I don't know, maybe Jeff Samardzija, somebody like that. It'd be nice if you could get a bigger name, a more frontline pitcher than that, but they're coming off the board here. I don't know if you want to empty out the system for a David Price who's going to cost you multiple prospects too when you're as far back as the Blue Jays are relative to the picture.
What names do you think absolutely will go July 31st? I know you mentioned some of them, but I'm curious, like guys that they debate doing, but who definitely will be gone among the bigger names by July 31st?
Well, I think David Price will move because the Tigers aren't going to re-sign him, and they're just really, not in a position to maintain the level of success they've known for the last few years. I think Yoenis Cespedes as well from that team. Justin Upton from the Padres. I think we could see a few Padres dealt, but he's the number one guy because he's a pending free agent. Going back to the Reds, I think Mike Leake, another pending free agent. Samardzija from the White Sox. Those are some names that I expect to shift around. There's a lot of starting pitching out there to fit just about every budget, and I think teams will find fits for their rotations.
The added wild card spot, which means it's one more team, but probably two or three that think they have a serious chance of getting in the playoffs. How has that changed the buyers and sellers ratio?
Well, I think it allows teams to squint and believe that they still have a chance at the very worst at that second wild card spot. That's kind of a false hope. You get five teams who are 3.5 to 5 games out of the wild card spot, which was, I think, the situation in the American League last week. And that's, you're betting on a really long shot, and trying to make a very small upgrade that could cost you something. I think the tendency, it's good PR to bite your lip and say we're in this thing and give up a top prospect, but it's probably not great management in the long run because you're chasing something where you maybe only have a 1 in 6 chance or something like that. It's not just the distance from the playoff spot. It's the traffic ahead of you that can really hamper you.
Well, Jay, it's going to be a busy week for you and all your colleagues. Thanks very much for making time.
All right, sure thing. Thanks a lot, guys.
Jay Jaffe joining us, Major League Baseball writer, SI.com, and the Toronto Blue Jays and everybody else. It's going to be the story du jour this week about trades that happen or ones that don't. People love trade talk. You can fantasize. There's fantasy pools and there's fantasizing pools where you can, for a week now, figure out who you could plop in if we just made this deal or that deal and make it all right for whatever your Major League Baseball team is. Toronto Blue Jays, of course, the loss yesterday to the Seattle Mariners. Buck Martinez will join us at 11 to chat about that, the triple play and all the things that went weird in yesterday's game. So the Jays off tonight on Sportsnet. Chicago White Sox taking on the Boston Red Sox. That's 7 p.m. tonight on all the Sportsnet network stations. John Danks, starting pitcher for Chicago, and Joe Kelly will be the starting pitcher for the Boston Red Sox, of course, for the Toronto Blue Jays, they'll be back at it tomorrow, taking on the Philadelphia Phillies, and later in the week, Kansas City Royals. And as we said, we chatted with Jay Jaffe about a little bit earlier. The newest Kansas City Royal pitcher, Johnny Cueto, he gets his first start against the Toronto Blue Jays. So that's when you looked ahead to the lineup, was something you weren't expecting on the weekend. So that's one more challenge for this Toronto Blue Jay team. When we come back, David Amber will join us. Of course, a colleague from covering the National Hockey League, but we'll chat about his work at the Pan Am Games and some of the great Canadian athlete stories that we saw over the last 16, 17 days. That's all coming up. Gord Stellick in for Jeff Blair on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Well, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show without Jeff Blair. Gord Stellick in all this week as Jeff Blair takes over for Bob McCowan. Kind of our trade deadline week. People moving around different pieces that way. And Buck Martinez will join us at the top of the hour as we chatted earlier. Jay Jaffe of SI.com chatting about the trades going on. The Johnny Cueto trade, for example, but other possible trades that are going on around the Major League Baseball world as we count down to the July 31st trade deadline. Hockey news breaking earlier this morning, just in the past hour. Derek Stepan agreeing to a six-year, $39 million contract, $6.5 million per season average on that deal. He was a restricted free agent, staying put with the New York Rangers. A big piece there. And kicking things off on a Monday morning, of course, we've got a whole week to count down more Major League Baseball talk. The Toronto Blue Jays getting back in action tomorrow evening. But Scott Russell kicked it off. He was the host for the Pan Am Games on CBC. And we had a number of callers phone in about their Pan Am experience, good, bad, indifferent, and about whether heading ahead to putting a bid together for the Olympics, whether it's something Toronto should be looking at 2024 and whether you had changed your opinion that way. So we're just in the process of connecting. David Amber was part of that coverage as well. Normally covering the hockey front, but covered a number of different sports over the Pan Am period. So he'll join us momentarily. And a little bit later on next hour, we will, after Buck Martinez, find out more on the New York angle as the New York Rangers bring in Derek Stepan for that contract. And again, Pan Am-wise, I mentioned my experience has been real positive, that I went to a lot of the events and enjoyed it. And the fact that it was marketed months ago or years ago as this incredible number of thousands of people would be coming to town and the roads would be chaotic and everything would be booked and it was for outsiders or tourists. And I think a lot of people found on the later side, once they got tickets, that they really enjoyed the events. And I can certainly say that. The Sevens rugby, the beach volleyball, track, you name it. Some of the ones I went to in person, and a guy who was there in person covering it on Sportsnet and CBC, David Amber joining us. How you doing, David?
Gord, I slept till 9:30 today. I feel like a new man.
Well, we had Scott Russell on earlier. He was on the road heading to his cottage for a well-deserved rest, and I know you're certainly in that category as well, though I think you got younger kids than Scott, so you never really get that kind of same kind of rest that he would at this point. You've done a number of different events like that, and I just wonder how you quantify what is a success or not, or what, you know, your impressions from a guy who was covering a businessy, but also sit back, take a breath, take a look, and what you thought.
Well, my initial thought going in, I'll be honest with you, I was a little pessimistic, and it wasn't about all the traffic and everything. I just didn't know if Toronto would embrace the Pan Am Games because it's not the Olympics, and I know we sort of have an opinion here in Toronto. If it's not the best, we don't love it, and we don't look at it in the same light. But I was really, really surprised with the level of excitement. I was surprised with the level of volunteers at every single venue, and you were just talking about all the venues you were at, scored. I mean, all those people in the yellow, distinct yellow mustard jerseys, so many volunteers. The crowds were great. I did aquatics for the first week of the games, and it was sold out virtually every day session and night session, except for a couple. We're sold out. We're loud, boisterous, a lot of Canadian flags, a lot of sort of nationalistic pride. So I was actually quite impressed with how the venues were, the level of excitement, the crowds, and the Canadians' athletes, I think, responded accordingly. So it made it actually quite a fun event and quite a bigger scaled event than I think anyone really anticipated.
See, I think at the end of the day, you always embrace the athletes. I think even you could be the most cynical of whatever, but then when you see, and especially Canadian athletes, because, you know, it's pride in our country and the kids and that, or young people, that's what gets to you, because you see those people and whatever the venue, they're giving their best. And to me, that's how a certain energy and vibe really starts developing.
Yeah, you know what, Gord, you hit it right on the head, because right from day one, when we started interviewing the athletes after they competed, to a person, they were like, oh, the energy, I have never had a chance to perform on home soil. I just never thought it would be like this. And they really played off the energy and the enthusiasm of the crowd. And when they were struggling, like there was those long swimming, you know, 800-meter swim race for the women. And the Canadian athletes were like, I was perking up because I could hear, even though I'm, you know, exhausted, I'm, you know, 12 minutes into this, you know, swim, I could hear the crowd cheering for me, and it just got me, my energy level to another level. So it was great. The Canadian athletes loved it. And even, you know, even guys like Anthony Bennett, Andrew Nicholson, who play in the NBA, I mean, we're talking professional athletes, were like, oh, it's nothing better than being on home soil and getting cheered like that. So I think that's something maybe we didn't anticipate, but the athletes certainly loved it, and it made for a true sort of home field advantage, and we see that by the number of medals that Canada won.
Well, and I want to talk about the basketball team a bit, but just even one step further, when I went to the beach volleyball, and I was unlucky and got women's beach volleyball rather than men's, but anyway, I struggled through it. But they were perfect in the preliminaries, and I know they didn't play their best in the medal round, but after they won, then they were in the stands because they had so many volleyball friends there. So all of a sudden, yeah, like after the game and you're watching another match going on, and there they both are. So, I mean, you talk about the connect that way, and they got a neat cheer. And it wasn't like a hot dog and showboat thing. It just, you know, they happened to come to and thank people that supported them. So that was a real nice part that way.
Yeah, it's a community. And at every single venue, there were friends and families of the athletes. And not just the local GTA, but coming from New Brunswick and Nova Scotia and Newfoundland. I talked to families who came from Alberta and Saskatchewan. I mean, this was a big thing, and it was great. It kind of gave it this international scope to it, the way that, you know, people will travel for Olympics. I did the men's volleyball. The final competition of the games was Argentina versus Brazil. There must have been 50 Brazil flags in the stands. And I'm not saying all these people came from Brazil, but, you know, certainly there was a contingent of people who had traveled from some level of distance to be here and enjoy it. And the athletes were embracing it. And I did see that quite frequently. The athletes, when they were done competing, were up in the stands cheering on their teammates. It was quite cool. It was a pretty cool atmosphere from start to finish.
Now, on the basketball side, by the way, David Amber joining Gord Stelick on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, talking about the Pan Am Games, which have consumed pretty well all of David's time over the past couple of weeks. And I heard Jay Triano on with Bob McCowan on Primetime Sports, because this whole basketball team, it's always a, you know, different animal and about, you know, plans and for having years where Jamal McGlure and Steve Nash, to name a few, wouldn't play in the big events for Canada at the end. Anyway, Nash wouldn't. It was an interesting influx that we kind of stacked the team, but we also had some unheard of kids that really caught our eye. So it was instant learning. I think it was kind of basic basketball learning for a lot of Canadian basketball fans. And what did you think of it?
Well, I think it's great. I think first of all, what we're seeing is the Vince Carter, Toronto Raptors, Steve Nash effect. This is what it is. These are, when you talk to these young guys, oh, you know, I used to watch Vince Carter, I used to watch Steve Nash, and it gave me sort of encouragement that I could get to this level. And, you know, Canada's the second most NBA players behind the United States. I mean, Canada now, I believe, has 14 active players in the NBA, and they're going to be fielding a roster next month in Mexico with mostly NBA players to try and qualify for the Olympics. And it's great. I mean, the one guy that maybe left the greatest impression of me of all the athletes I saw over the last 2 weeks was Jamal Murray. The kid's 18 years old, fresh out of high school. I don't know if you got a chance to watch some of the basketball, Gord. But
oh, I did.
Kid, I mean, this kid was, it was ridiculous. I mean, he is, he's fearless, and he's clutch. And in that win against the U.S., which was arguably, you know, one of the better sporting events I've covered, period, in the last few years, I mean, he scored 22 points, all of them in the fourth quarter in overtime, at 18 years old, going up against men, incredibly poised, and he is going to be sort of that next great big Canadian basketball player right there with Andrew Wiggins. So it's great, and that's what we're seeing. Guys want to be in the program, and to Steve Nash's credit and to Jay Triano's credit, they're going out recruiting these guys, and they're doing it in a very professional way, and success breeds success. Guys want to be part of the program now. Whereas before, you're right, there were so few guys, and are you going to give up your summer? And you had all these other conflicts, but now guys are saying, this is a priority to me. So it's great. Canada basketball, don't be surprised, and I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but don't be surprised if Canada ends up on the podium next year in Rio. I mean, with the fact that they can trot out, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 NBA players, they should be able to compete with basically every country, aside from, you know, the U.S., which, barring a huge shocker, will win gold.
Okay, so the play of Murray caught the average person by surprise. Did it catch basketball insiders by surprise as well?
Yeah, you know what? I had a chance to talk to Dan Shulman, ESPN's Dan Shulman, who gets to see a ton of basketball, and Fran Fraschilla, who did the color during the Pan Am Games. And he's basically your sort of international expert. He's sort of the Mel Kiper, you know, for college football. He does it for college basketball. He knows all these kids. The obscure kids out in, you know, Nigeria and Sudan and everything else. And he said, you know, Jamal Murray is already a top 10 draft pick expectation after his 1 year in Kentucky. And then at the end of the tournament, I said, Fran, how, you know, what about Jamal now? And he goes, well, his stock's only gone up. He's probably a top 5 pick at this point, in the sense that he's really opened eyes. When you can compete at that level against grown men, that Brazilian team, you know, was a very good team that won gold, but they're grown men. They're 26, 28, 29 years old, and here's a kid fresh out of high school, just turned 18, and he held his own, and beyond, you know, anyone else's expectations. I think it's great. I think he's just elevating right up the ranks. So people who know a lot more about basketball than I do think he's a special player, and he's going to probably be a one-and-done at Kentucky, and he's going to be sort of the next big thing coming out of Canada.
You mentioned that the Canada-USA game was one of the better sporting events you've ever been at. Was there the letdown a bit the next day? Could that partly be attributed to that for a very different Canadian team on the court?
Yeah, I mean, Jay Triano, when we interviewed him after, he said, look, we improved during the tournament, but we're still a young team. Canada had two players older than 25 years old. I mean, this is an incredibly young team. And at times I think they showed that, and maybe, you know, as much as they lived up to the moment leading up to that, maybe they got caught up in the moment. And, you know, Andrew Nicholson, who is an NBA player you'd expect would be able to keep his composure, keep his poise, you know, he gets a fourth foul, he gets teed up arguing the fourth foul, gets thrown out, you know, when they're down by 20 points. You can't have your essentially your best player and one of your NBA players and your leader have that happen to him. So I think poise did become an issue, and I think maybe there was that emotional, I don't know if letdown's the right word as opposed to this. You know, I think maybe they got caught up in the moment a little bit, and you know, Brazil just laid it on them. Brazil won that game in the first quarter where they shot 12-16. You know, they had a 13-point lead after 12 minutes, and Canada stuck with them the rest of the way. They lost by 15, but they put themselves into such an incredible hole. So I think maybe that was where the inexperience and sort of the youth of the team did catch them, and the air was let out of the building because people were like, we're going to win gold. This is unbelievable. What a team. And within 5 minutes when Brazil, you know, was up by 7-8 points, people were like, uh-oh. This isn't how we thought it was going to shake down. So I think the momentum started to work against them a little bit, Gord, right off the hop.
Okay, so David, from the high-profile basketball team, and all those years ago when I first saw you on the other network, you were covering volleyball, CIAU volleyball way back when. And it's funny, it's a sport. We all love to watch it. We like to play it when we go to a resort just out of the blue, get it going, that stuff. Again, I did the same thing. I love watching it on TV. No idea where Canada stands in world rankings or what have you, but talk about our men's and women's volleyball team and the tournament.
I know. It's funny. It came full circle for me because you always remind me of my humble beginnings with the...
That's when I noticed you. That's right.
My one and only time doing play-by-play, and yeah, that didn't go so well. But I can tell you the women... really struggled, actually, here at the Pan Am Games. And I'm not going to pretend to be an aficionado when it comes to international volleyball. But there was 8 teams. Canada finished 8th. So you don't need a math degree to tell you that's not where they wanted to be. I think on an international level, the Canadian women aren't as highly regarded as the men. The Canadian men grabbed bronze. It was their first medal since 1999 at the Pan Am Games. And they basically said, this is a showcase for us towards Rio. This is our national team. These are the guys we're going to run with. Canada wouldn't be expected to medal in Rio a year from now, but I know, from what I understand, they're sort of a top 10, top 12 program in the world, whereas you had a lot of the top international programs here at the Pan Am Games. Brazil is back-to-back silver medalists in the Olympics, and they won. They actually won the silver. They lost Argentina in five sets, which was the final event of the games last night. So Argentina, Brazil, the U.S. are sort of your top flight volleyball program. So that's why there was such an excitement in the building yesterday, because I think people realized this could be actually sort of the appetizer to what we're going to see in Rio a year from now. It could be Argentina and Brazil fighting for Olympic gold a year from now. So the fact you get a preview of that with essentially what will be the national teams, it was very cool. And Argentina came back. They were just trailing two sets to one. They came back and won the fourth and fifth set to grab gold, their first gold since 95 at the Pan Am Games. So they were quite jacked, and they were saying this is, you know, kind of showing them we're ready for them next year in Rio, which was a neat thing.
Well, you mentioned the high level of volleyball that way. Just to go back to the basketball team, because you mentioned them qualifying or trying to qualify for the Olympics when they play in Mexico. How do you see this team being sculpted, or about any kind of additions, or what the Jay Triano may be able to do to put the best team out there for Canada?
Well, I mean, I had a chance to talk to Rowan Bear, and he said, you know, the Ducks are in a row. I mean, they fully expect. And I interviewed Corey Joseph. I saw Nick Stauskas. They were sitting courtside. They're there. Andrew Wiggins wasn't there, but from all indications, Andrew Wiggins has been cleared. The insurance has been covered. So you're talking about Joseph at the one, Stauskas at the two, Wiggins at the three. Tristan Thompson is the one asterisk here because he's still figuring out his contract for next year, and I think that could keep him out of the lineup. But if that gets figured out, you have Tristan Thompson, who would arguably be the leader and at this point maybe the best player on Canada at the four, and then the Boston Celtics' Kelly Olynyk at the five. I mean, you'd have five legitimate NBA players as your starting five. And the beauty of that is then you can take the Brady Heslips and the Jamal Murrays and the Andrew Nicholson and Anthony Bennett, and that's your bench coming off, you know, the Robert Sacre. It's a very good mix. And this is the perfect storm for Canada, Gore, because here's the thing. The Americans, they're the defending Olympic champs. They've already qualified for the Olympics. Brazil, they're the host nation. They should essentially be given the host nation slot. So Canada now, if that all is holds court, I hear there's a few issues with the Brazilian team. They got to do some things to make sure that they're going to get their automatic spot. There's going to be two spots available at the Olympics, and Canada would have a very good chance of getting one of those two other spots from the America tournament in Mexico. So they're in a good position. It will be a massive, massive, massive disappointment if Canada does not qualify for the Olympics, trotting out 7-8 quality NBA players, showing the chemistry that they just showed in the Pan Am Games, and with Steve Nash running the show and Jay Triano coaching it. This would be the expectation is Olympics. If they fall short of making it to Rio, this will be a massive disappointment. Now, I should also mention that if they don't qualify at the Tournament of the Americas, there is one final qualification tournament, which happens early next summer. So this isn't their last chance, but I think they want to, you know, rest assured and not have to worry about entering a tournament next July with countries from all over the world, where I believe there's one or two spots available and you're going to have like 16 countries. You don't want to get into that sort of scenario. So they fully expect they'll punch their ticket to Rio in a month.
Well, David, looking forward to that. Thanks for joining us on your first day off. And yes, I did get the picture you took a number of months ago, me falling asleep late at night watching the hockey game. So appreciate that memory as well. Thanks for joining us, David.
Anytime, Gordon. Enjoy your summer, bud.
Will do. David Amber joining us from Sportsnet CBC, talking a little of the Pan Am Games coverage. We got baseball talk. Buck Martinez will kick off the next hour. Gord Stelick in for Jeff Blair on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.